welcome to That's the Thing, a sometimes belated, already outdated guide to your teens, tweens, and everything under 20. I'm Elizabeth.
And I'm Karen, and we're a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. You'll hear more about that and our other sponsors later in the show.
Okay, so Mom, this is going to feel like a bit of a non sequitur, but what does the phrase the American dream mean?
That anybody can pull themselves up by their bootstraps and become, at least a middle class, but possibly a rich person, and have everything that they want, I guess. I don't know.
How often does the American dream actually work out?
Less often than the number of people who believe that it is available to them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason I bring this up actually is because we're talking about YouTube, and this applies to YouTube as well. A lot of people believe that they can make their YouTube channel and get millions of subscribers and become internet famous. And that's what YouTube encourages people to believe, and that like almost never happens. So we're going to talk about that and the implications it's had on YouTube, and we're going to look at a particular case study first and kind of make this a two-parter. So the American dream exists in the world and marketing of YouTube, and it has failed kind of in a very similar way to the way it has in America, sometimes quietly and sometimes, as you and our listeners may know, spectacularly and distressingly. So we're going to talk about TanaCon and more specifically why TanaCon happened and what that means for the future of YouTube, as well as the rising tensions between the company and creators, which has plagued the site for years. But before we can understand TanaCon, we first must understand its older and far more successful predecessor. We must understand VidCon. So what do we do to kind of figure out VidCon?
So I had the pleasure of talking to Kyle Marshall, who's a fellow member of the Alberta Podcast Network. So yeah, Kyle certainly has been to every single VidCon from the beginning, and he has seen it evolve over time, as well as seen YouTube evolve over time. And he's, besides being a podcaster, he's also a YouTuber.
Yes, yes. So we're going to play that now.
Hello, Kyle.
Oh, hello. Yes, this is going to be really fun, I think.
I hope so. So we're doing a That's a Thing episode about TanaCon, and I feel like you can't understand TanaCon without understanding VidCon, and I thought, hey, I know someone who's been to VidCon, so that's why I want to talk to you.
Yeah, not just been to VidCon, but actually been to every single one. So I've been all 9 years it's been a thing.
And how unusual does that make you?
You know, it does feel like a bit of a unicorn at this point. I think on last count, if you count the guests that they've invited, because there's been some YouTubers that they've invited every single year, I think there's around 15, maybe 20 of us that have actually been to every single one. So not an insignificant number, but not a huge, huge number either.
So let's start with saying, like, what is VidCon?
So VidCon was this brainchild from Hank Green, who, if your audience is not familiar with, does a lot of different things on YouTube. Him and his brother started a channel way, way back in the early days of YouTube, like we're talking about 2006-ish, called Vlog Brothers, which is still going strong, where him and his brother do a video each week kind of talking back and forth with one another. But he's also the driving force behind channels like SciShow and Crash Course and a whole bunch of other ones. But back in 2010, although planning probably started in like 2009, he really wanted to celebrate online video. He was very passionate about it. He could see where the future was heading for it. He could see that now that YouTube was coming in, or I should say Google was coming in with money and starting to do partnerships with different creators, that this was going to be people's full-time job very, very quickly. And so he decided, let's invite a bunch of these creators that I happen to know about. And because we all started around the same time, let's just come together with fans. We'll have musical performances, we'll have these breakout sessions, we'll have hangouts with each other, and we'll just celebrate and just love this weird niche thing that back in 2010 it really still was. And so that's where VidCon started from, was just a celebration of online video.
So then how has it evolved over that decade?
Well, definitely, and I could start seeing this huge shift at around a little bit in year three, but mostly in year four. They had transitioned from the basement of this hotel because they didn't need a whole large space for the number of people that were coming. But they had transitioned to the Anaheim Convention Center. And this is where places, things like the Disney Expo happens out of, and like these other huge conventions happen out of. And once it kind of got to that point, and I think attracted just a lot more people because, you know, Disneyland is right across the street, then you started seeing this dynamic of fan and creator being, there was a huge chasm that was being created from there. So we saw people stampeding towards their favorite creators. We saw, you know, some security issues here and there because no longer was this just a celebration of online video. It was almost a celebration of celebrity, which I don't think was the initial intention of the VidCon organizers, but that was the reality that was coming out, that these people were looked at as being up on this huge pedestal instead of being this really cool niche entertainment thing that was happening. So definitely it started in a way that I could be standing next to, I'm going to throw the name again that you may or may not know, but I could be standing beside Philip DeFranco and just have a conversation with him, to be now know those people are behind curtains, behind locked doors, and you do not go and see them unless they are on the panel that you happen to be a part of. That integration just doesn't mix anymore. So I kind of miss that feeling of being able to just run across your favorite creators, which can sometimes happen, but really not meant to be the case. However, what I still do appreciate about VidCon is just this fact that I get to meet people that are like-minded. I can come across smaller channels that I had never heard about before and still get that chance to see these really neat, unique moments that can still happen because of this love of online video.
It seems like it's not as cozy and serendipitous as it was when you first started going to VidCon. What makes you keep going back?
Well, part of it is stubbornness, for sure. At this point, it's like I have to do the full 10 years, the first 10 years, just so I can say that I did it. After that, I guess I'll reassess and see if I want to continue to go back. For the longest time, at least for the last 4 to 5 years, it was because I had begun making a lot of friends who would also fly in or drive in. And we got to, you know, kind of spend the weekend together. And these are people that I admire the stuff that they're creating, whether it's video or not video. And I don't live beside them. So it's a lot of text communications that I normally am having with them. But this, I was able to, you know, see them, have dinner, just hang out and enjoy each other's company. And that really drove me for a lot of years. I still think that there are these snippets of greatness that you can stumble across.
So Elizabeth's going to explain the whole TanaCon thing to me, but as a VidCon vet, what do you think of this idea of I'm going to break away from VidCon and,
you know,
do my own convention?
That concept specifically actually does not bother me all that much. I have no problem with alternative programming. And I think there's some legitimate criticisms that you can level at VidCon, and especially the person who was behind TanaCon, this girl named Tana Mongo, which I think I'm saying her name right. She, I think, has a bit of a legitimate beef with the organizers of VidCon. Now, I'll be completely upfront and honest. I really don't enjoy her videos very much. I find that she tends to go into the drama of YouTube. There's this whole subculture of making drama or YouTube drama happen, and she seems to kind of always find herself at the center of that. So a lot of complaining, a lot of being upset about different things, and you can only listen to that for so long, I think. But with that said, again, I think she had some legitimate criticisms where they were using her as a way to advertise VidCon, but not actually giving her one of the creator passes or one of the invited guest passes, which I think there is a little bit of a disconnect that happens there. So there being a separate VidCon or like the alternative VidCon, I think, great, awesome idea. This falls into this an awful way to execute on that idea. Years 1 and 2 of VidCon, when it was down in that little small basement, there actually was no security. they had zero security. They basically organized it in such a way, though, that made it look like there was security there and just would assume that people would not go through certain doors or go to certain areas because, you know, just with the signage and roping off certain things to make it safe for some of those invited creators that they were bringing in. But honestly, anyone could have walked anywhere they wanted to because there was nobody blocking the way. It wasn't until year three where they actually hired a security team to come in. So for me, this seems like Tana tried to make year one VidCon, but with year nine's attendance. And that's just not going to work.
Thank you so much for informing us about all of this. I'm going to plug your podcast later, but why don't you plug your YouTube channel?
I do a YouTube channel. I upload videos every single week. You can get there the quickest by going to youtube.com/KyleMarshallTries. You can also just search Kyle Marshall in the search bar on YouTube. I am not the 12-year-old boy who makes videos. I'm the other Kyle Marshall that will show up when you search for that.
That's awesome. Shout out to 12-year-old right. Kyle Marshall, too, though. Thank you, Kyle.
Thank you. Okay, so now that we kind of, hopefully more than kind of, we understand VidCon, let's touch briefly on the TanaCon disaster and kind of the reasons for its failure. But first, we're just going to squeeze in a little sponsor thing so I can go through this massive block of disaster nice and smoothly.
This episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by LitFest, which is a gathering of sorts that is going to go far, far better than TanaCon. I don't know if you knew this, but Edmonton is the home of Canada's first and only nonfiction festival, which is LitFest. And this year it runs from October 11th to 21st. It will feature dozens of events with writers from all across the country and beyond, all sharing true stories and big ideas about culture, food, science, politics, and more. Among the writers that are coming are award-winning poet Billy Ray Belcourt, musician and documentarian Dave Bedini, Rachel Gisa, who you may have heard speak on a recent episode of Modern Manhood about her new book, Boys, What It Takes to Become a Man. Artist Vivek Shreya, who's the author of I'm Afraid of Men and Even This Page is White. Michael Hingston, an Edmonton writer who's just written the definitive take on Calvin and Hobbes called Let's Go Exploring. And Elizabeth Renzetti, who you may know from her column in the Globe and Mail. That's just a tiny sample of all the people that are coming. You can get the whole list at litfestalberta.org. Festival passes are only $129, but you can get a deal if you use the offer code that will be in our show notes. So make sure you check that out. And don't forget to go to get your tickets and find out who's coming at litfestalberta.org.
We're back. So I'm going to cover kind of the basic W's of journalism, following in my mother's footsteps here. So like the who, what, when, where, the what went wrong, and mom, please interject with questions when you feel like it. I'm just kind of trying to cover as much as possible. And I looked up the last name pronunciation of Tana Mongeau. So I'm the only person who's ever done that, and I'm very proud of myself.
Surely not. But anyway, carry on.
I am the only person. Okay, so Tana is a 20-year-old storytime YouTuber. You know what a storytime YouTuber is?
I think you have to explain. What's a storytime YouTuber?
Okay, so storytime YouTuber is somebody who basically sits down in front of a camera and tells you a story from their life. And these are often very exaggerated, personality-based videos. She also does other stuff, but she's known for her story times. She has over 3.6 million subscribers, and every video she puts out has at least 1 million views, despite having a more erratic upload schedule. So it's really rare for somebody to have consistent views with such a weird upload schedule. She makes music. Everybody makes music if they have over 1 million subscribers and none of it is good. If you do not specialize in music, your music is not good on YouTube. I'm very sorry to tell you this. So she put together this thing called TanaCon, named after herself, because of course an influencer would do that. And this happened after she had her status as a featured creator at the most recent VidCon revoked and was later banned from the event. So Tana decided, not the most recent VidCon, the VidCon last year,
right.
Basically. The most recent one would be weird. That would be really quick to put together a convention. Anyway, so Tana decided that she would put together her own quote-unquote free convention, keep that in mind, where fans could meet up with their favorite creators. So this was people like Tana, Shane Dawson, Miranda Sings, Casey Neistat. There are more than 80 influencers there. It's huge, right? People who were also snubbed or not attending VidCon for other reasons, like they had problems with it, like Tana did. On April 2nd, she released an hour-long video absolutely trashing VidCon for the way she was treated. And this is when she first announced TanaCon, branding it as kind of an anti-VidCon, where she got rid of all the problems VidCon had. So things like not being personal with creators, her not being a featured creator, all that stuff. So Tana spent around 4 months planning her convention. Can we spot a problem here?
Well, a really, really big convention with like 80 YouTubers.
Yeah, 80 influencers.
Influencers, and then, you know, hundreds of thousands of fans, presumably, possibly, there. That seems like not enough time.
Yeah, kind of. You usually take a year to prepare a convention. So she decided to get help. She employed a company called Good Times to handle the business, so finding the venue, selling the tickets, hiring the security, and so on. The convention was set for June 22nd to 23rd, intentionally overlapping with VidCon, and the host venue was the Anaheim Marriott Suites, a hotel only a few blocks from the convention center where VidCon was being held. The space available had a capacity stated on their website of 1,000 people. Keep this in mind. Okay. Tickets for TanaCon were $65 each, and only about 300 of the promised free tickets were actually given out. So if you say you're putting together a free convention and 300 people get a free convention, you sell tickets. That's fun. That's real fun and ethical. On June 22nd, 5,000 fans from around the world flocked to the Marriott. And the original reports that people might have heard are 20,000, 15,000. No.
Okay.
Absolutely not. You don't have that many fans. No, they do have that many fans, but that's not how many people came. That's not how many tickets were sold. So 5,000 people. The minimal security, absolutely overwhelmed. Promised bag checks, not performed at all. Nobody, like the security was not good and not enough people. The first 1,000 fans were welcomed inside the Marriott, where Tana, completely unaware of the upcoming chaos, like almost comically so, believed the convention was going smoothly and just carried on with her activities. At least one person outside was carried away on a stretcher after being kind of trampled by the crowd. And outside, fans spent hours in the hot sun without sunscreen, shade, or water because they weren't expecting to stand outside for hours.
Right.
So that's also fun. Never do anything outside. The plan was to let people in 1,000 at a time, meaning that those who had made it inside the Marriott were expected to leave, like, right after arriving.
Wow.
Yeah. So how would you feel about that, right? Like,
yeah.
They just tell you, okay, you've been in here for, like, half an hour, time to leave.
Right.
You paid $65. That's less than a dollar. That's more than a dollar a minute for your that's more than a dollar 2 minutes, right, of your TanaCon experience, right? So that's not great. So, of course, people refused to leave because that's not what they were promised when they purchased their tickets. And so they just didn't go, and the new people couldn't be let in. So those outside suffered, like, severe third-degree sunburns. I don't know if you've ever seen a third-degree sunburn. It's not a pretty picture. Dehydration. Again, the girl was hospitalized. She was 14 years old. So that's real fun.
Yeah.
It took hours for the staff to actually decide to hand out water bottles to people, which is, like, a basic thing, really. Like, it was like a refugee camp of middle-class teenagers in this parking lot with no supplies. And even then, there weren't enough water bottles for everybody, so people were basically getting, like, a cap full of water to assuage their life-threatening dehydration. And the CEO of Good Times, 20-year-old Michael Weiss, was riding around on a Segway, dodging questions about the event. He was on a Segway the whole time. He's going through this convention hall. People are getting sunburned outside. This, like, tiny man with blonde-designed hair, segwaying around, telling people that everything was fine, and then telling people that everything wasn't fine and it wasn't his fault, which is fun. by the time afternoon rolled around, they canceled the convention. It was supposed to go on for 2 days, didn't even make it halfway through their first day. So those lucky enough to receive them left with a small little memento of their visit. It was a cheap tote bag containing a lanyard, stickers about veganism and vegetarianism, and a Tana condom, the most effective form of birth control. Nobody will want to go near you. So she promised, like, super high quality gift bags with like makeup samples and stuff. That's what people got. Right. Apparently the condoms weren't very good either. They, like, broke immediately. So the most and least effective form of birth control. So I don't know if we've gone to conventions before. I don't think you've ever planned a convention. You've spoken at a lot of events.
Yeah.
What do you think it would be like to be one of the influencers who was supposed to be there? Like,
well, it depends how much they shielded them from the chaos, right? And so it sounds like Tana was semi-oblivious to what was going on. So maybe they didn't know. But it just, it seems like, I'm not saying that 20-somethings can't organize big things, because they do all the time, but this seems to be like a lack of adult supervision situation, right?
She was 19 at the time, actually, when she was putting this together.
So, like, a kind of naivete about how much work goes behind making a successful event, which could be part of what set her off around VidCon as well, right? Like, it's Hank and John Green that put on VidCon. Who are grown-ups and who
very much so.
Who are aware of, you know, what needs to go into an organizational thing. And from what I can understand from Kyle, VidCon has changed over the years, partly because YouTube has changed and got bigger, and the star quality or star power of people on YouTube is such that it requires some changes, which she maybe didn't understand very well. And maybe some of the fans didn't understand very well either. Like, they wanted to meet their heroes, and VidCon was making it hard for them to do that in an unfiltered way. And so they were attracted by the opportunity to do that without understanding that there's chaos ensues if you don't have some control over it.
Yeah, and like, the more I researched this, the more I thought about, like, we went to the inaugural PodCon kind of this year, but last year, time is weird.
No, last year, in December. Last December.
So we went, and it was really well run, and it went smoothly, and that's actually weirdly, or not weirdly, rare for our first convention. So I kept thinking, like, we're so lucky it didn't suck.
But the Greens were involved in PodCon, so they had the VidCon experience. They had lots of other people helping them, right? Like the Maximum Fun people and the McElroys and probably, surely, administrative people who aren't, you know, well-known.
20-year-old Michael Weiss.
I didn't see a segue the whole time.
No segues. That's how you have a good convention. No segues. So speaking of segues. No.
And anyway, it speaks of naivete. A lot of people have drawn analogies between TanaCon and Fyre Festival, right?
Yeah.
Which was like a music festival sort of influencer kind of thing that also blew up spectacularly. And at the core of it seemed to be a combination of naivete and overconfidence and
incompetence.
All combining to create this terrible disaster.
Yeah, it's real fun yeah. stuff, basically. So, speaking of segues, let's just hop in with another sponsor break here, and we will come back with a bit of the fallout of TanaCon, resulting videos, because of course it's YouTube, everybody makes videos about it,
mm-hmm.
And kind of a little bit more about why it happened and who was to blame, ultimately.
This episode of That's a Thing is brought to you by Back to School Again, a podcast about people who made the decision in midlife to return to school, either to pursue a new type of career, to augment their current career, or just for the sheer challenge of learning something new. It also chronicles the personal journey of host Katrina Ingram, who is back in school after more than 2 decades away. She's also the co-founder of the Alberta Podcast Network, so she's a busy lady right now. It features, Back to School Again features conversations with all kinds of midlife learners who are currently enrolled in post-secondary studies or have recently completed their degree. Katrina talks to them about their stories, what brought them to this moment, how they balance the responsibilities of school, work, and family, and where they hope their educational pursuits will take them. So that podcast is available now in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and most other podcatchers. You can also find the episode and the show notes at backtoschoolagain.ca. Back to School Again is presented by Norquest College and is an affiliated member of the Alberta Podcast Network. Find it and our other affiliates at albertapodcastnetwork.com.
Woo. Okay, we're back. Let's talk about the videos that came after TanaCon. So about a week after the event, Shane Dawson, a YouTuber who has been active since before I started using YouTube. So ancient, forever. Ancient man. completely classic YouTuber.
Yeah.
He released a 3-part documentary covering the disastrous convention. So if our fans have heard about it, it might be from this.
That's how I heard of it, because one of our fellow podcasters, Greg Beaver from I Have Some Notes, talked about it on Facebook, and this was like the first time I'd even heard of these words.
Yes. Each video is like 40 minutes long, so they're long, they're comprehensive, they're edited together, it's very professional looking for a YouTube video, and they're massively popular. Like, we're talking like tens of millions of views on these videos. Both Tana and Michael Weiss from Good Times appear in the docuseries, as well as several people who attended the event, fans of Shane Dawson. Tana and Shane painted Michael as a villain who planned a convention he knew would fail. Tana's money and reputation, like, be damned in all of this. Michael is evil and bad. Tana alleged that other YouTubers managed by Good Times considered Michael abusive and a money waster who they were afraid to stand up to and who had failed to significantly boost their careers. So basically what Good Times is a convention planning or a company, which is likely going to fold like immediately because it's such bad press, and like getting gigs for influencers and stuff, which is kind of a new field, which is partly why it's so sketchy, I think. And also he's 20 years old, so... No, don't. Would you trust?
I think that there are people in their early 20s who are capable of doing this. It just seems like this is not the guy.
Yeah. Like, I'm 4 years away from being 20. Less than 4 years, right? I would not trust me to plan a convention. I would not trust me to help somebody's career in any way. I am dead weight. And I feel like that's what Michael is too.
Okay. But again, it does happen. Anyway, onward.
Yeah. On the other hand, the YouTube community has criticized the documentary as highly biased. Shane and Tana are friends, and he clearly goes far easier on her than he does on Michael. They have this like kind of relationship where he's like, I am your moral guide, like a father figure. And she's like, you're like my YouTube dad. And it's weird. It's weird and awkward. But basically, they are or pretend to be very, because you can never tell on YouTube. They at least pretend to be very close friends. Like, they say love you when they hang up the phone. So, not exactly even-keeled here. So, grains of salt all over the documentary. The docuseries has also been accused of being overdramatic and making its revelations seem way more profound than they actually are. Michael has responded to the allegations by stating that the Marriott lied about its capacity, that Tana failed to help them plan the convention, which has been proven false, and that he staked so much of his money into the convention that he was at risk of losing his house. So, quality businessman.
All right, but not that I want to be the defender of this dummy, but I think that if you are dealing with somebody who has 3.5 million subscribers and millions of views per YouTube video, you could look at that situation and think, this is my chance to take my company to the next level. This is going to be a huge success, and I am willing to risk everything in order to make, take advantage of that opportunity.
That's fair, yeah. I mean, not good, but fair, I guess. Yeah. Michael also made several vague references to lawsuits against various companies involved, although none of these have come to fruition. It's more of a, I will sue you because it can't be my fault kind of situation. He also claimed that Good Times was going to make its own documentary on the convention, that he had the rights to it, and he had cameras there recording everything. So this led to the kind of fun little conspiracy theory of he made a convention that he intended to fail so that he could make the money from the great documentary about how bad the convention was, which is ridiculous but great. I'd watch that documentary,
That is some three-dimensional chess.
Yeah. We have ascended to the next level. Just to illustrate what this is really like, I'm going to play For Mom and include in the podcast some audio from the documentary. This audio is a recap from the end of one of the documentary episodes, and it's kind of leading into what's going to happen in the next one. So here we go.
I want to see some of this.
Oh, whoa! That was like a conspiracy moment.
Why would I go on then to scam someone? How the f*** would that make sense? How did anyone lie to you, Tana?
A lot of people think she's a mess. Like, they don't trust her. They think she's lying a lot.
If that is true, I didn't know that.
I have the video footage, and I will show it to you.
I think the time of protecting Tana is over.
No one wanted this to work more than me. You don't understand, Jamie.
You both f***ed over me and thousands of people. There's no way that 5,000 people could fit there.
Right.
There's no way. You both knew this wasn't gonna work. Is there anything you wanna say? Is there anything you haven't got a chance to say?
I don't even know how to say this.
I just let you tell the people who love us to love you, and I'm so
So, reactions.
So my first reaction is how much the aesthetic of this is like what the little bits of reality TV that I have seen. It's like this level of YouTube, like this whatever tier or whatever it is of YouTube is just like the Bachelorette or the people in the house or Big Brother, whatever.
The people.
it's like this heightened drama with music in the background to tell you how you're supposed to be feeling right now.
But
and there's a fakeness to it, mm-hmm. that it's like part of the aesthetic, right? Like I look at that and I think, this doesn't look real to me. I think that she's actually crying. I think she's actually upset. But this is so, pro wrestling. I don't understand why anybody like has feelings resulting from this other than, you know, scorn or curiosity or whatever.
Yeah. I was watching your face while you were watching this clip, and there's one, so mostly you have your, like, just jaw slightly open, which is your neutral, I'm in taking information face, I have found, but at one point your face just, like, squeezes up into this look of disgust and confusion. Do you remember when that was?
I don't remember.
Okay, so Tana was crying about something, and you just, like, wrinkled up, like, I don't buy it. So grumpy. It was great. Yeah. So, of course, because everybody's like, this is biased and fake-looking, all the tiny commentary channels crawled out of their little caves. Commentary channels are channels who basically choose a random subject and make fun of it with poorly sourced facts. So, like, me, but a YouTube video. And so they come crawling out and they're like, actually, Tana is the one at fault here. And it's all a bigger conspiracy and Shane's in on it and they're manipulating you. So, like, so many of those, you take your pick. They'll give you an opposite opinion. Quality varies. You are warned. Anyway, so that's what Shane had to say, and he was working with Tana, but Tana was radio silent for over a month after the actual convention. So on July 29th, Tana finally released a video discussing the event. This came after she received heavy criticism for her silence about the convention. The video is an hour long, and it could be 10 minutes long, but I watched it on double speed because I have to do my due diligence, and there was, like, 10 minutes of useful stuff in there, and the rest was her sitting there screaming at Michael into the void. So it's, like, loaded with further accusations against Michael, who has mostly just disappeared since Shane's docuseries, which did not paint him in a very favorable light, so I think the internet is kind of mad at him right now, and it's fair to hide. Tana has repeatedly stated that because it was rooted in spite against YouTube and VidCon and marketed through her name and brand, the blame for the failure of TanaCon ultimately does lie on her. What do you feel about that repeated assessment?
Well, it's true.
Yeah. It's always bordered by, and this is the garbage Michael did, but it was all my fault.
Right, yeah. But this seems to be from the bits that you've told me about sort of YouTube drama. That's the common trope, right? It's like, I did a bad thing. I need to confess to you. But by the way, it wasn't completely my fault. Yeah. There was all these things going on, right? Like, that's like the typical way of approaching any, you know, real or pretended transgression.
I do want to mention just again, like, she was only 19 years old, and like, she was clearly way in like way over her head. Mm-hmm. It also seems prudent to share this clip of Tana, sourced from Shane's docuseries, of Tana discussing overselling the venue during the planning stages, meaning she was 100% aware of this.
So, like, I think we're in a good capacity. I mean, we could drop it to 3,000 if we wanted to, instead of 5,200.
What are we gonna?
Okay. What's she talking about, though? I'm not clear.
So she's talking about, so they're discussing the capacity of the Marriott versus how many tickets they're going to sell or give out. I don't know if they were still trying to run with the free idea, but apparently Tana has no idea what happened to that, so whatever. But they're discussing how many people they can sell tickets to. And Michael, and like, it's Tana and a bunch of her friends and Michael. And they're talking about, like, how many people should we allow? Michael's like, I kind of think we should just keep selling, but we could just go for the capacity. And Tana's like, we could, but are we gonna?
Oh, okay.
So she does not look good in that.
Well, it's so puzzling to me, the apparent lack of clarity around what is the business model for this, right?
Yeah.
Like, with any creation of entertainment or media at all, you basically, you have three choices. you are going to get your money from the attendees slash users slash readers slash watchers, viewers, or you are going to get your money from sponsors who want to access those people, or a combination of both.
Mm-hmm.
And so with, like, we're going to have really fancy swag bags, that suggested that she thought the money for this was going to come from sponsors who wanted access to the fan base of all of these YouTubers. But if you have, if you're going to do that, you can't just say, hey, I'm Tana, we're putting on a convention, how much are you in for, right? Like, yeah. Like people who have big bags of money to make a convention possible want reassurance that it's not going to reflect badly on their brand and that this is actually going to help them accomplish their business goals. And if you come across as a tire fire, then they're going to say, call us next year, maybe, right?
Yeah.
And so then at some point, maybe they realize that and say, well, how are we going to pay for this? I know we're going to charge people $65 to come, and we'll just keep selling those tickets until, you know, we can't sell them anymore. And we'll worry about the rest of it later, which kind of is a good problem to have, I guess, but also like hugely irresponsible.
Yeah. So despite the disastrous results of her rebellion against the powers that be, Tana appears to have kind of held on to her guns. And when she touched on her motives for creating TanaCon in the video, she said this. As much as I want to be radio silent and continue to hide the good parts of my intentions, the parts of me that wanted to be a voice for the creators and make a change in this industry and make a change in the way creators are treated and be the voice for people and give the fans what they deserve, that voice in me doesn't want to back down, because if I were to back down and give up on the right things that I believed in, that would be losing in my eyes. So that's kind of her like thesis statement wrapping up why she did what she did. And it echoes the sentiment of a lot of YouTubers towards YouTube and VidCon and all of these major events.
But YouTube and VidCon are two separate things. And I don't understand why the anger at YouTube for changing the rules that pulls the rug out from underneath creators, I guess, is transferred to VidCon, which just seems like a reasonably well-organized convention for people who love YouTube.
Well, the issue is they've been seen in a paralleling way of slighting creators and not caring about creators. And VidCon is also very closely partnered with YouTube. They have panels with actual YouTube staff. And on those panels, people from YouTube have said things that creators believe are false and have made statements like, your video, people aren't seeing your video on their subscription feed because you didn't make it public, when these creators know they made it public. So it's the idea of all these big institutions for influencers completely failing them. And so I also feel like this is why those 80-plus massive social media influencers just kind of went along with it without anybody saying, hey, Tana, how's it going? Are you doing okay?
Right?
Like, it's not only 19-year-old newcomers like Tana who are bitter and naive. It's veterans. It's Miranda Sings and Shane Dawson and Casey Neistat, who should know better by now. They've been influencers for so long. And I think it has a lot to do with the deterioration of relationships between YouTube and VidCon and the creators. And that's something which has radically changed YouTube over the past year. So I think next time, this is a two-parter, we're going to cover the history of YouTube and the failure of this American dream of YouTube. And we'll be touching on things like copyright, algorithms, blacklisting, and a ton of other things as we discuss the place which shapes my generation's entertainment. Because the politics on YouTube are weird and unregulated and crazy.
All right. Well, we'll say to be continued, and as we say goodbye, I'll just remind you that we are a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network powered by ATB. You can find us and more than 40 other shows at albertapodcastnetwork.com. You can find the extensive show notes and probably necessary for understanding this episode, show notes at thatsathing.transistor.fm. Shout out to Transistor for hosting our audio. Shout out too to Unit B Co-working for making Studio B available to us for recording this for your ears. You can find That's a Thing on social media on Twitter at That's a Thing YEG. You can email us questions at thatsathingyeg@gmail.com. What else do we say at the end?
I think that's most of everything.
If this is your
this
first
is your
time,
job.
If this is your first time listening to our podcast, subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you like to get your podcasts. And that's all. Is that all, sweetheart?
I think that's everything.
Thank you.
Bye.
So is there anything else we should know about VidCon?
You know, the biggest thing to know about VidCon is that it is kind of indicative of conventions as a whole. It started off as this singular thing that was really meant to celebrate the love of a nerdy thing at the end of the day. This online video stuff that a lot of people then and sometimes continue to think is just like cats riding skateboards or weird videos that their work friends send to them. But people know that there's so much more, whether it's beauty or vlogging or comedy or whatever it happens to be your thing that you love, it's represented there. And it's grown to such a big thing now that bigger companies realize that. And in this last year, VidCon, the actual entity of VidCon, was bought by the huge conglomerate Viacom, which is even more hilarious to me.
Oh, wow.
Because years ago, Viacom tried to sue Google for uploading parts of their shows onto that platform. And this is actually true for many of the conventions, even like the Calgary Comic Expo and the Edmonton Comic Expo. Those are actually owned by larger conglomerate businesses who just use them to kind of to pad their bottom line. And what my worry is that they are going to be looked at as just something to be put into a portfolio of some kind, and the care and attention of what made it special in the first place starts to drift away. I don't think that's true for VidCon, at least not yet. I know Hank Green and a lot of the people who were running VidCon are still very much involved on the board, but it's going to be seen on whether or not that can be sustained for any lengthy period of time, or does it start to feel just much more corporate and cold as it's being, things are bought and you're just a subsidiary of a subsidiary, that sort of thing. So that's what worries me a little bit, but it might be a few years before that actually becomes something to truly worry about.
Well, if nothing else, you'll still have bragging rights.
That's right. No one can take that away from me.
Of the indie years.